You're on. You're
Love
on.
Talk Radio.
Okay, just when I open your mic, you'll
I
be.
I need the number again.
Okay, 995.
Go ahead.
I wish I could break all the chains.
Good evening. I'm hoping you can hear me. If you can, give me a big freedom shout, Yahuru.
Hello.
All right. I'm going to try and let you hear a broadcast this evening, and I'm hoping it comes through because it's going. Can you hear it? Okay, that's your voice of Mamiya trying to talk to our college students. Yes, that is Mamiya's voice. But I believe we have Sister Lisa on the line, and she was at Columbia. Some people have been there. I'm going to try and tap her in. But Mamiya has been speaking on both campuses. Before we do that, I'm going to ask Sister Lisa if she could give us a report. Sister Lisa, I hate to put you on the but your mic is open. Could you give us a report? I've got Mamiya trying to talk in the background. Go ahead.
Can
your
you
mic
hear me?
Is open.
Can people hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Great. I just want to say that I was at the CUNY encampment earlier today, and CUNY stands for City University of New York. And while I was there, it was just an absolutely wonderful vibe. I had the chance to go on Saturday, and I was asked to come back to do a teach-in. So they invited me back. I was there at 2:00, and it was just awesome. It was so inspiring. The students and everybody there, they were just so wonderful. And I stayed several hours, but while I was there, they got notification that the college was going to be closing in on them and was going to make them disperse. And this was such a well-organized encampment. You know, I hate to use the word peaceful because I think that's weaponized against us, but still, it was orderly. The people were so welcoming and so warm and orderly and well organized. And so they asked everybody, they put out the word and they said, please let people know. They gave an update before I left. They said that they are determined to fight. They wanted to get how most people felt. Everybody said, yes, you know, they're going to protect the encampment. They said, this is about righteousness and justice. And they said, they don't care if they're inconvenienced. Look at what's going on in Palestine and also throughout the world. And so by the time I left at about 4:00, maybe 5:00. And by the time I left and I went to check online, I'm still in the train because I live in New Jersey. They were talking about that the police had surrounded them, that they were not letting people in or out. They asked for the community. They said to please come out and support if they are able to. I just recently saw a video of the police acting violently towards someone, pepper sprayed somebody in the eye. So evidently the police went on the campus and they're just acting brutal. But even to see all those police out there who were, you know, surrounding the encampment, we're not going to let anybody into the campus or out. And there's no need for that period. First of all, the students are right. They are talking about a genocide. They are calling for, you know, to stop a genocide. And as we know, whenever people are standing up on the right side of the issue and for people, the United States is against it. And so are the universities. They have a horrible history, as we know. This is a system founded on colonialism and brutality. And we just see that showing up more and more. And from what I understand, they are also locking down Colombia as well. I heard tonight, you know, from, you know, reliable people who were there at the Columbia campus earlier today that the police are also surrounding the campus of Columbia. And there was also an interesting dynamic that I noticed because I got on the number one train to go downtown from where CUNY is. CUNY is located they are at 140th Street and Convent Avenue. And they are asking for the people, for the community to show up, even to show up tonight, tomorrow, or what have you. And so as I was on the one train, they announced that the one train was going to bypass the 116th Street stop. That is the stop to Columbia University. And I was also at Columbia University for a moment earlier this week on Saturday. But when I was there, the police had the campus surrounded. They weren't letting anybody in. So there was not a lot happening on the outside. You know, you could barely see people on the inside, but one of the guards told me that that stop on the number one train had been bypassed all week long. They weren't even letting people stop there. So that just goes to show the mentality and the control of that what goes on in New York City. And we know CUNY University is, you know, a university of the working poor, you know, the working class people, predominantly brown and black, from what I understand, and I'm just now learning these dynamics, but I didn't understand them before. But Columbia University is considered Ivy League, you know, and haughty and all of that. And I think it's really interesting how they are blocking that stop, not letting the train stop at 116th Street at Columbia University.
Well, Sister Lisa, what were the numbers like when you were there? What were the numbers
like? Oh, on Saturday at the time I was there, there had to be about 200 people, maybe 300 people. Today it was about, when I got there earlier, it was about maybe 100 or, you know, 150. But more and more people were coming in toward the end of the day. And by the time I got ready to leave, you know, the crowd was a nice-sized crowd. Both times it was a nice-sized crowd, and even all throughout the day, but it picked up in the evening.
Okay, well, I can't thank you enough. Did you notice if this was the people you saw before, if it looked like an entirely different crowd?
The organizers were the people I'd seen before. I really couldn't gauge it that well. I had the feeling that there were people who were there before, because a lot of them are students too, so the students, they're there. But it was a very dynamic crowd, and people just warm, just being very nice. Like, for example, I dropped something, and the willingness that people show to help me or to help me. I had some banners, had to stop to help me just fold up the banners and stuff like that. It just was the kind of vibe that you don't get all the time, you know. in New York City. But I will say this much. They want to always try to make it sound like, oh, these encampments, they're so violent and all of that. We know that is just not true. And there was no need under any circumstances at all for the police. First of all, they shouldn't be there. That's really a condemnation has got to be issued toward the mayor and the police department. Well, the whole country, we know this. But there was just no need at all for that kind of force that they showed up with. There was absolutely no need for it whatsoever.
Well, I want to thank you for, you know, this here, Lisa. You know, those who have been up there in age have been out there. If there's ever an incentive to lose weight and to keep yourself physically fit, this is it. I hope you have something to hang in there. We're going to go to the and then we're going to give you. I want to congratulate you and thank you. Sister Lisa Davis of the Black is Back Coalition, Vice President. Right on, my sister. Thank you for this.
And I want to thank you. Thank you so much for the tremendous work that you're doing with Blog Talk Radio.
Well, we're fighting them. You know, they're taking us from one ball to the next, and we keep trying to come back at them because we're on Facebook now, and we're getting so many acknowledgments on Facebook. So thank you. It's people like you that made it happen. I'm going to resume our usual program now. We have the poet in the house, and I want to thank him because I know it's not easy to keep up with me. Professor Louie, your mic is open, and thank you for putting up with me.
Trouble is as close as that siren you hear outside. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Serious trouble that can double in an instant. It's not something distant. Cop car, fire engine, ambulance, followed by silence, guns, knives, fire, heart attack, stroke. Happens if you're rich or broke. What can you say? We've been taught to look away. It's not our business when other people suffer. We have made a buffer between us and them across the world. It's a common problem. And it's the same with tragedies in far-off places. Can there possibly be spaces in our response? What if it happened in the Bronx? 200,000 dead from the tsunami. Don't bother me. I got my own problems. Will it help me solve them? So it's nothing new. The siren blows for you. And that newscaster on TV coming up on tragedy reports it factually. No expression except maybe fake concern. And when will we learn that the newscaster gets paid every day to say what they say, and they're all actors anyway? So don't ask for who the siren blows, for who the ambulance goes. No time to pose in your fancy clothes. Through and through, it blew for you. When you hear disaster call, that siren blows for us all. And how far away are you going to go? Can your mind be so slow as to blame the guy who's bothering you on the street because he wants something to eat? Or will you think about why he's homeless, why he got to make do with less and less, and why in one of the richest cities in the world is there even one boy or girl without a home and the government can't even throw them a bone like a place to live? And they have got to confess there are millions of families homeless, no home to call their own. And who do you blame for the pain? Is it the same to blame the guy out on the street with nothing to eat or the people who put him there? Who is it that didn't care? Who didn't want to share? And we know the guy is crazy, but I defy anyone who isn't lazy to stay one weekend on the street and not start to go crazy. No one to trust, no one who won't bust you, combust you, and who set the homeless guy on fire and watched the flames get higher and thought it was a joke. After all, we knew the guy was dead broke. And did you ever fear that you can hear in your ear that you might be without a home, can't get a loan, eating a bone from the trash with zero cash and no hope of getting some, no hope of ever sitting in the sun, of ever having fun. So you better not cry when you pass them by. Better to curse the ones on top, the ones who forgot the people, the ones on the bottom, those who are forgotten, and let everyone you meet know that although there may be no quick fix for the situation on the street, it does not feel that way for the people out on the street or for the people with nothing to eat. And it is policy that put them here, put them there, policy of I don't care and I don't want to share, policy that builds no zero subsidized housing, policy that builds no Mitchell Lama co-ops that today, right now, have already been stopped, even though these co-ops are paid for by the tenants, and it wasn't even penance. And when some people work full-time at minimum wage and can't get out of the cage while they age and got to pay about one-half their money on rent, is it heaven sent, or was it meant to send a message to the landlord and real estate that it's okay, no matter what people say, to treat some of us as less than human? It's okay because business is booming, and in the final end, who profits from there being people so low, down below, people without a home, people who cannot get a loan, no matter how hard they try? It's not you and I who profit from the lost soul. Worse than cold to think that way. It's not right anyway, no matter what you say. We should pay attention to the when and where and think about who put them there. And now that wherever you go, you think you know that the whistle blows for you, what are you going to do? Will you continue to do nothing, not one single thing about it, or are you going to shout it from the top of the roof, go and get uncouth about it when you hear that siren wail? Will you do something for the people in jail? When you hear that horn blow, will you do something for everyone you know who's on the bottom so at least they know they're not forgotten? And how is it that you don't know, fast or slow, that there has got to be something better for the children? And if there's something better for them, as plain as could be, that there is something better for you and for me.
Right on. Thank you, Professor Louie, and thank you for getting in despite all the drama. Much appreciated. We've got to move right along because I know most of you had stress getting on tonight. One of our presenters goes way back with me, like me, in history and can give you a little background on what it was like when we took the Columbia, I say we, when our generation took the Columbia campus, and some of the dynamics are different. And Comrade Lisa Davis helped me see that tonight. Joel, your mic is open. Professor Joel, your mic is open. Can you hear us?
Yes. Yes, it's wonderful seeing the campuses rise again. It's been a long time since it's been this kind of an atmosphere. And the ruling class, they seem to be afraid of their own shadow. They're cracking down on the university presidents, who in turn are cracking down on the students. They're not cracking down hard enough, or what is it? Like, if you look at those headlines, they're calling for a total purge of anyone who, it's not that they've taken any anti-imperialist positions, these university presidents. It's that they went along with allowing the studentry to demonstrate on the campuses. And therefore, they're being held as every label from totally irresponsible to anti-Semites, violence. They're talking about violence, how people don't feel safe on the campus. But you notice they don't cite a single victim who had damage to one hair on their head. I mean, it's just total nonsense and propaganda. And I don't know how it's affecting public opinion, but you can see how scared the ruling class is, that they see that the population, starting with the youth, as usual, is turning in a wholly different direction than where they wanted to go.
And
this is very scary to them because, you know, the billionaires and trillionaires together are just a handful of people, and they depend on the working class and to a large extent even on the so-called middle class or the people somewhere in the middle, intellectuals and so on. They expect everybody else to come together at their command or at their manipulation to create more wealth for them, for the billionaires and trillionaires. And they see that people now are getting wise to it. They feel and they think, oh, here's what we'll do. We'll call the police and we'll arrest all those people on the campus. And then a few days later, they see that it's spreading more to other campuses. It didn't intimidate people. It more infuriated people. And then all of a sudden, you know, they were comparing it. Well, they say, it wasn't like 1968 where buildings were taken over. And almost within an instant, that is happening now. And it's spreading across the country. And as people watch this country, they say, you know what? If that's how the Americans are behaving, then how can we just stand still? And the whole image of America loses its power to terrorize or intimidate the rest of the world because they see that people that can make the difference are turning against the ruling class. And again, we have to watch what's happened. But they started out with the three university presidents, and they asked them a few questions allowing these demonstrations to be taking place. And they said, you allow them to say this and say that? And they tried to give answers that are, according to the legal definitions, what you're supposed to allow on the streets. They say, well, you know, in the university campus, we have to be even more encouraging of various opinions to come out because that's what the university is all about. And I think a lot of people, if you went to university at any time or college or even high school, you learn more in the so-called bullshit sessions than you do in the lecture halls. It's because when you're hearing things in that context, you're more animated and you're more immersed and more driven with a higher spirit than when you're hearing some lecture coming at you. I know, like in the data processing field, they used to have an expression that was sort of a joke. But it wasn't like a funny joke, but it had a lot of truth to it. And when computers were new and it was a whole new field that people were venturing into to one extent or another and to one depth or another, it was a saying. They said, see and forget, hear and forget, see and remember, do and understand. And that's what's happening now with what what's sometimes called participatory democracy, that democracy grows out of people going into action and participating. They're doing
exactly.
And understand, developing a much deeper understanding that had motivated what they're doing altogether. And it's one thing that the we've already had the case of Aaron Bushnell, who immolated himself in protest against the war. He was an Air Force officer, the most conservative of the services, the Air Force. And he immolated himself because he felt so dramatically opposed to the genocide that increasingly is going on, and also to all the other robbery and plunder that the genocide is enforcing. And and if I believe that that's an index, that if one individual in the Air Force has already taken that action, that means that the armed forces composed of today's youth, who have been largely inactive compared to yesteryear's youth, suddenly burst into flame. And this youth, even in the military, is probably a very problematic thing, because they may not be reliable. You put arms in their hands, and you don't know in which direction those arms are going to be pointed, because a lot of the people, for example, the people demonstrating on the campuses, identify with the Palestinian people. So if you send youth like that into the Middle East to kill Palestinians and to help wage genocide and so on, they may turn those guns around. That's what happened in Vietnam. It was a very important component in the U.S. losing the Vietnam War. That is the most powerful superpower, a superpower, right, defeated by a movement in a small country and relatively underdeveloped, but which was fighting with spirit. And by the end of that war, a lot of those soldiers had changed their spirits, and there was that phenomenon called fragging, where they were throwing fragmentation bombs into the tents of the officers. And the feeling
I've got to ask you to wind it up, because we want to get off early enough tonight, because a lot of people have been demonstrating today. But you did exactly what Ralph would have wanted you to do. You helped tie the history of the protests on the Columbus campus, Columbia University campus of yesterday, with the campus uprisings of today. In particular, the whole issue of doing and learning and seeing and remembering. Thank you, Joel. Did you want to give one more sentence before we go on? Because we've got so many people on the call. Can you give us another sentence, and then we'll have to wind it up?
Well, I just want to say it is exhilarating to see that spirit of protest, and protest is the first step towards going beyond protest, and things are really becoming much more high-spirited, and people are beginning to come into their own to the point where people will become the power to the people. That's what democracy means. They use a Greek word when they say it, but that is what it means. Democracy, it means power to the people, and power is something that the people can only take. It's not ever given. It's not ever given for free. It's people are taking power.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom, and thank you for being here to guide us. Okay, we're going to move right along, and you know this is a program for political prisoners, and you know how much Brother Ralph Poynter respected and loved Jericho. So we've got Jericho in the house. Sister Ann, I know you've been working with the Kamal Siddiqui campaign. If you want to give us an update on that, we'd appreciate it. And if you've had any positive feedback in terms of Amir, I tried to play the recording of Amir on the campus, but it was not powerful enough to go through. However, your mic is open. Please proceed.
Okay. I just wanted to say I did see that if you go to Prison Radio, you can download his talk to the Columbia students. That one is up. I haven't seen
Thank
the one.
Thank you, Ann.
Just so you know. And if you go to Twitter, you can see some of the things happening right now at both Columbia and CCNY. It's a strategic response group dressed in full riot gear on both campuses. They're completely outside of City College on 140th and Convent. They've taken up the whole block. There are SRG, regular cops, and community affairs all busy arresting people. And simultaneously, tear gas and rubber bullets against student protesters in the University of South Florida also happening now. And also happening now, what we should never forget, is intensive bombing of Rafah going on as we speak. So just so people know, that's what the students are there for. They are protesting genocide. They have every right to do so. And I thought your analysis was really good. I don't have a particular update on Kamal Siddiqui today because I wasn't able to attend the meeting last night because I got stuck late at work, which also happened again tonight. But I do have an update on Joy Powell. Yeah. I do have an update on Joy Powell and the women at Bedford Hills. Okay, now, we know back in the beginning of April there was a fairly major earthquake, right? I know my building shook. And Bedford Hills, if people don't know, is an older prison. It's old. There's one like down there that I'm surprised is still standing after that. And anyway, so this was happening. Women were all like in panic. So, of course, the thing to do when there's an earthquake is you are supposed to evacuate and go outside, which they could easily do. They got plenty of outside space, you know, inside of the gates of that thing. But that did not happen. Instead of doing that, the women were ordered to lock into their cells. So, you know, that was, they were in a bit of a panic. Joyce was trying to help, you know, calm some of them down and so on and so forth. So all of this happened, and what happened as a result of this was that they decided they were going to hold a massive group disciplinary hearing that was held, weirdly enough, at night, which they don't usually do. And so 30 of the women are already being collectively punished with Tier 2 tickets, and some of them are put in the shoe, which is, you know, the hole. And a Tier 2 ticket means you lose your commissary and packages for 30 days. You may also lose your phone privileges, which I think is what happened to Joyce, because she has not been able to call. So we have been waging a little campaign to get people to call up, not only for the 30 women, but also for Joyce herself, because they were having these hearings in the evening. Joyce is a diabetic. She had gone to get her, you know, evening insulin shot. She came back to the hearing room, and her sugar level was dropping, and she was getting the shakes. So she asked if she could go to her cell to get something to eat. So, of course, they escorted her to her cell. She had something to eat, so she was feeling better. And then she said, okay, let me ask if I should go back to the hearing room. And they said, oh, no, we'll start doing this in the morning, right? So this did not happen at all. And even though she never had a hearing, she was issued a Tier 2 ticket, so she was told, because she has never been given any paperwork for that either, which they're supposed to give you immediately, because you have 72 hours to appeal this hit. So, of course, she hasn't been able to do that in all this time since April 5th. It's now April 30th, right? So we are asking people to call and email Superintendent Eileen Russell at Bedford Hills and also DOCS Commissioner Daniel F. Martuschello. And they are referring us when we do make these calls and emails, which are all up on jerichony.org. So please go there, folks, and take the steps to do this. And the other place they always send us to is the Office of Special Investigations. So I put their email there as well. And, you know, in the middle of everything else, you know, we're having repression everywhere. So not surprising that repression in the prisons would also be increasing. And while you're at it and you're on jerichony.org, put please click the link to sign the petition to D.A. Krasner, insisting that he drop the charges against Mumia. If he drops the charges against Mumia, Mumia could walk out the door immediately. The whole case is then moot. So I would say please take the time to do that as well. And I did hear his speech to the CCNY students. It was wonderful. And they were very receptive. Because one thing he said to them, he said, you can't ask for just ceasefire. You have to say, cease the occupation now.
Exactly.
You
know? Exactly. All right, man. Thank you.
And thank
What's
you.
The call?
For your ma.
Thank you. All right, we've got to move right along. We want to try and get everybody in. I'm seeing that Brother Sayero is in the house, but I also see Comrade Belinda, Sister Belinda, and since she's calling from a different time zone, I'm going to ask her to speak, and then we'll go back to Brother Sayero. Sister Belinda, welcome. I sent you an email that's talking about the statistics of what's going on in Louisiana. I hope you got it. But in the meantime, speak to us, and thank you for getting on.
Yes, Sister Betty, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to speak. I really enjoyed the show so far, and Professor Louis is off the chain. I just love to hear him speak and just be so profound in his speech. But, yes, I did get your email. I'm very concerned about what's happening here in Louisiana, which the whole world needs to know, that Louisiana is ground zero for the corruption, especially with these racist, unconstitutional Jim Crow laws that are so devastating to the people here. But I want to talk about, you know, the fact that we are still in a serious fight for the freedom of people that have been wrongfully convicted here in the state of Louisiana. And we nicknamed it 10-2. And that is where you can be sentenced to 25 years to life in prison without having a unanimous jury. That was taken off the Louisiana Constitution in 2019 because Brother Ralph, yourself, Sister Betty, and Pastor Pickney and the Chairman O'Malley, all of you all came down and stood with me to rally the people to vote that unconstitutional law out. But the people are still sitting in prison. They did not make it retroactive to free those individuals or give them a fair trial or let them go free. So we're still fighting for them. We're in the process right now of rallying the families together with a public outcry that we want our loved ones to be free. So I'm hoping that people can go to my website and read about us. Go to Louisiana United International. That's www.louisianaunitedinternational.org. And support the work that we're doing because we're not going to stop until all of these people that was wrongfully convicted be let go free. Thank you, Sister Betty.
Hello? I'm sorry for the delay. People are calling me from all over the country because bad stuff is happening all over. And Sister Ann, I've got a story very similar to Joy Powell. I hope there's time for me to tell it at the end of the broadcast. I don't want to take time from political prisoners for my little story. But it's that strategy of entrapment has reached all the way down to the local level with city commonses. And I'll explain what I mean. Sister Belinda, what do you want us to do now? What can we do right now that will make a difference? Because as Comrade Joel made so clear, you know, if you hear it, forget it. But if you see it, remember it. And if you have an action, that will educate you. So what can we do? What kind of action can we do that will educate?
Well, Sister Betty, I know that you all know, you know it best, but what I would like for people to do is just go to our website and make a small donation. Any small amount, you know, it helps out a lot. Because right now, when we're fighting for these individuals, that some of them have, all of their family members have died out. They don't have any type of resources whatsoever, but they're still fighting. So, and they need us so much to support them. And I know you know what that's all about. You know, Jericho knows what that's all about. And we can use all the help that we can get. And any amount counts. It doesn't matter how small the amount is, any amount counts. So if you go to our website and just click on, you know, donate, it would really help a lot. So, and also, Sister Betty, you know, our colleges are down here right now, you know, that are protesting. You know, our young people are standing up and speaking out, you know, not just against, you know, the wars and stuff that's going on, but they also crying out and speaking out for Louisiana, you know, mass incarceration. You know, this is a trap, and we want it to stop. So I would really appreciate all the help that we can get. And I would love for you to come back to Louisiana. That would really help, because I know, you know, we had a great time. You guys were on the radio show and TV shows and stuff down here, and I'm telling you, these people are really listening and watching everything that's going on across the country. So thank you so much, Sister Betty, for letting me speak.
Thank you. And if you email me the link, I will put it on our announcement for our broadcast when they go out. And I have to arrange for you to call in for our BAI broadcast, okay? But I thank you again for getting on and keeping
us. Yes, I will.
And I'm going to try and get there. I'm trying to get my doctor's approval to travel. And I've got to keep, you know, Ralph's concern going. And, you know, he kept wanting to get well so he could go back to New Orleans. And it's been on my mind. So thank you, Sister Belinda. I know what it means when you call in, because you have never not been busy 24/7. And I know you've suffered personal family loss, the COVID and everything else. So I admire your strength and the way you keep going. Thank you for calling in. We're going to go right on to Brother Comrade Sierra, and I thank him for his patience. And I'm sorry you had difficulty, if you had any difficulty getting in. I say that to everybody. My sincere apologies. Brother Sierra, welcome.
Well, hold on. We don't control the media. But it's not your fault. It's not my fault. This is the Colonial Motor Production. First of all, I would like to make an announcement. Real brief. Now, heroes. Uhuru Bakery and Cafe, we need support. We need people not only to give, but also to set up fundraisers, as we do with everything that we need to get done. Gives Day, this is what you write down as a site to go to, givestlday.org/Black Power Blueprint. That's givestlday.org/Black Power Blueprint. You all remember Charles Cookie Thornton. Charles Cookie Thornton was a black man that was in Kirkwood, Missouri, down in Missouri, a slave state. Back in February 7, 2008, Charles Cookie Thornton couldn't take it no more. They took all of his business. They wiped him out. They cited all of his equipment. They sent him to the nth degree. Well, Charles Cookie Thornton, being one of my heroes, went into the chambers of the city commission. He shot and killed the police. He shot and killed. Because they took him over the edge. They took him over the edge. He became our hero because he's having been stripped of everything. This was a successful businessman, as we talk about Pastor Victor down in Louisiana. But they stripped him of everything. Now I want to bring it up to the date where We talk about the brother, Terry Clark Hughes Jr., who took out four cops, right? And I'm going to say this. But these same cops, I look at their pictures. They were vicious. They were the kind that would person and just beat your butt, would do things to you. We've seen this time and again. They raided this brother. This brother said he wasn't going to have it. He took out four of them and injured five. He shot a total of nine. He was prepared. He knew how to use his weapon. So if you got weapons, don't be foolish enough just to have a weapon. Learn to use your weapon. We're in those days and times now where it's all rising. The temperature is at an overboiling point. You heard Comrade Belinda Parker Brown. You hear that we have to go beg to get Leonard Peltier out of prison where he shouldn't be in, been in there for 48 to 50 years. We have other comrades, Mamie Abu-Jamal, in prison who should not be in prison. Being jailed by a criminal institution that claims some democracy that is not democratic at all. It's an autocracy. We've been living under autocratic government all of our lives. We have to really watch it when we go to the store. We're being watched no matter where we go. We're being stalked. We're not the criminal. We're the victim. And people are tired of being victimized. There's a rise between here and across the globe telling the United States to get out. Take the military and get out. Take their military and take it home to themselves. Take that military and get out and stop stealing all of our resources. We're tired. Everybody's getting tired. This nonsense about the campus, body slamming instructors. This is the military force, the brutal force, and these tactics that they've used all the time. Don't tell me it's new. This is old. This is nothing new under the sun. But this is what we faced all of our lives. And now we're rising. That's why they need shaking, and they will. They're getting so mean-spirited with it that they will kill at will. No matter how far, they will push you to the limit. No matter how many demonstrations you hold, they will push you to the limit. They will accuse you of crimes that you never committed, but victimize you through the media. You know how that works. This is what they've always done. And now I got to say, I have a new hero. Terry Clark Hughes Jr. I salute that brother. He was 39 years old. He died in a fury raid. They were encroaching his home, and they don't come at you just like they came at the chairman. They came at the chairman in force, a military force. They're not playing a game. They will kill you. And we got to take this seriously. I know we don't have the time, but I want to salute that's already spoken. And yes, we got to support our political prisoners. We got to support our single families, those over in Palestine, Sudan, other places all over this globe. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Uhuru. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We're going to keep this spirit going. I see that I know Brother Cosby said he's not feeling well, but I just wanted to give him a shout-out, and I just want to hear his voice because I haven't heard it in a long time. So, comrade, just let me hear your voice. Give a message to the troops.
Peace, Brother Cosby. Peace, sister. Yes. Peace, sister. How y'all be?
We're good.
Everybody,
we're good.
Everybody sounds good, you know. I just want to make a comment. We're planning a rundown genocide run on African Liberation Day on May 25th up here, and you know, hopefully it'll be a good run. There's a lot of people getting busted up here, you know.
I didn't know. Give us more information.
On Mumia's birthday, 150 people got busted. The cops came down on them in Emerson, and then you know, more people are getting busted every day. There's so many people that they can't arraign them all. Nobody's gotten any real charges yet. They just giving people community service, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
about it. You know, nobody's getting any stuff.
I cannot thank you enough. When did most of these arrests happen? And in what town?
On Cambridge, on there's a lot of MIT, Emerson, and a few other colleges are all going out.
MIT, that place went out?
Yeah, huh?
I said MIT, those bushy people went out?
Yep.
Well, well, well.
Yeah, and Northeastern.
Okay.
Yeah, it's spreading. It's spreading. It's looking like, you know, like what Joe was talking about in the 60s, you know.
Okay. Well, Kazi, it's good to hear your voice. I cannot tell you how much.
One more thing. Sister Betty. In 97, we took a Project Hip Hop down to Louisiana, down to Angola, and you know, like that. I don't know if the sister said it before, but that joint was a slave plantation before, and all the guards that worked there live inside the prison. They raised their families inside the prison. It's like it was a plantation, you know.
Yes, I know.
They live, die inside that prison, inside them walls.
You understand what he's saying, Sister Belinda? He's talking about Angola. They took a class visit. Yes. Thank you, Brother Kazi. I am so glad you spoke with us. We're going to move right along. We're going to see if 7785, if you wish to make a few comments. If not, just give us a shout out and let us know you're okay.
yes. Listening to everything with a lot of attention, a lot of serious information being shared, and I don't want to waste any more time because I don't have anything particular. But, of course, we always have to say free them all the political prisoners. And right now what's going on around the campuses, around the country, it's heartening to see, and it's certainly it's certainly similar to, like, what was going on 60 years ago. And our task as older people and as people from those times is to not only support those young people in their efforts to stop the genocide that the Israeli Zionist state is committing against Palestinian people, but also help organize beyond the campus, you know, to support this putting right out in front. And with that, I'll just pass it on.
Well, I appreciate you, and I thank you for those words. All right, we're going to go to our brother Henry, and it was so good to see him this weekend. We want to give a shout-out to Sister Pam, I'm sorry, to Sister Suzanne Ross, because she did an amazing job of hosting our comrades, union comrades that support Mamiya at her home in the Bronx this weekend. It was an amazing feast, absolutely amazing, and we thank her and we thank the chef. Okay, without further ado, Brother Henry, your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty. I want to share as much of this article by Mumia that appeared in the current issue of Workers' World. The title of the article is What a Difference Half a Dozen Makes by Mumia Abu-Jamal. The war against Gaza has entered its 6th month and no end is in sight. Over 33,000 souls, men, women, and children are dead. Thousands of housing units have been destroyed and millions of Palestinians are facing imminent famine and utter starvation. Notice that I said the war against Gaza instead of the war against Hamas, an Islamist resistance organization. Why did I say this? Because the vast majority of the dead are non-combatants. Thousands are children. Are we to believe they were Hamas babies? The hatred Israelis feel towards Arabs in general and Palestinians in particular is beyond the pale. But this conflict is more than racist and more than merely political. It is both existential and territorial. It is a settler colonial conflict that covets the land of the Palestinians. It could care less for the people. Doesn't that explain the naked carnage of the war? Doesn't that explain the average of 5,000 deaths per month? One need look no further than the Israeli Defense Forces, IDF, killing of 3 shirtless Jewish hostages speaking Hebrew. As the saying goes, shoot first, ask questions later. If you're in the territory, you're a target. And then the killing of seven World Central Kitchen helpers happens, and liberals go bonkers. Israel gets wrapped on its knuckles. Bad dog, bad dog. Really? Really? Some 33,000 Palestinians get slaughtered, and the virtual silence is deafening. Dr. Frantz Fanon, in his classic work, The Wretched of the Earth, said that colonial conflicts are between two different species. The colonizers are deemed human. The colonized are less than human. For being unfree, they are non-human because only humans are free. The liberals call for a ceasefire. Why not go to the core of things by demanding an end to the occupation? Don't Palestinians deserve freedom? Don't Palestinians deserve a right to exist? Don't Palestinians deserve statehood? Or are these things only for Israelis? Perhaps I'm not being fair, perhaps, but then I think of the words of an Israeli diplomat, the ambassador who was discussing peace with Palestine, Danny Dannon, Israel's United Nations ambassador, in an op-ed piece for the June 24, 2019 edition of the New York Times, wrote that Palestinians need only do 2 things to establish peace. A, and these are his words, commit national suicide, and B, surrender. Think of that. A French imperial colonial couldn't have said it better. The United States is neither a fair nor impartial arbiter. It is deeply biased and arms apartheid Israel with weapons not for defense but offense. The IDF stands for the Israeli Death Force. So let us begin with a call. Seize the occupation with love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Well, we're going to see if we can get it. Well, I want to thank everybody who got on tonight. We're trying to give a credit to all of you who got on tonight in spite of everything. And we want to say thank you for what you did. We want to say thank you to Mamiya for being still with us and for being strong. And hopefully we'll have our new number back next week. And we hope that you will join us. And again, free Mamiya, free all political prisoners. And please remember to support Louisiana United International. And a special shout out to Jill Obra for organizing the bus to Philadelphia this past Wednesday. Remember, Sister Ann, go to Jericho. We've got to work on freeing our political prisoners. And Jericho has all the information. And on that note, I say thank you to all of you and a very good night. Hopefully, see you next Tuesday. What's the call? Free them all.